Chapter 1. Are there intelligent beings in the cosmos? Is it conceivable that we world citizens of the 20th century are not the only living beings of our kind in the cosmos? Because no homunculus from another planet is on display in a museum for us to visit, the answer, our Earth is the only planet with human beings, still seems to be legitimate and convincing. But the forest of question marks grows and grows as soon as we make a careful study of the facts resulting from the latest discoveries and research work. On a clear night, the naked eye can see about 4,500 stars. So the astronomers say. The telescope of even a small observatory makes nearly 2 million stars visible. And a modern reflecting telescope brings the light from thousands of millions more to the viewer. Specks of light in the Milky Way. But in the colossal dimensions of the cosmos, our stellar system is only a tiny part of an incomparably larger stellar system, of a cluster of Milky Ways, one might say, containing some 20 galaxies within a radius of 1,500,000 light years. 1 light year equals the distance traveled by light in a year. That is, 186,000 times 60 times 60 times 24 times 365 miles. And even this vast number of stars is small in comparison with the many thousands of spiral nebulae disclosed by the electronic telescope. Disclosed to the present day, I should emphasize, for research of this kind is only just beginning. Astronomer Harlow Shapley estimates that there are some 10 to the 20th power stars within the range of our telescopes. When Shapley associates a planetary system with only 1 in 1,000 stars, we may assume that it is a very cautious estimate. If we continue to speculate on the basis of this estimate and suspect the necessary conditions for life on only 1 star in 1,000, this calculation still gives a figure of 10 to the 14th power. Shapley asks, how many stars in this truly astronomical figure have an atmosphere suitable for life? 1 in 1,000? That would still leave the incredible figure of 10 to the 11th power stars with the prerequisites for life. Even if we assume that only every 1,000th planet out of this figure has produced life, there are still 100 million planets on which we can speculate that life exists. This calculation is based on telescopes using the techniques available today, but we must not forget that these are constantly being improved. If we follow the hypothesis of biochemist Dr. Stanley Miller, life and the conditions essential for life may have developed more quickly on some of these planets than on Earth. If we accept this daring assumption, civilizations more advanced than our own could have developed on 100,000 planets. The late Willy Ley, well-known scientific writer and friend of Wernher von Braun, told me in New York, the estimated number of stars in our Milky Way alone amounts to 30 billion. The assumption that our Milky Way contains at least 16 billion planetary systems is considered admissible by present-day astronomers. If we now try to reduce the figures in question as much as possible and assume that the distances between planetary systems are so regulated that only in 1 case in 100 does a planet orbit in the ecosphere of its own sun, that still leaves 180 million planets capable of supporting life. If we further assume that only 1 planet in 100 that might support life actually does so, we should still have the figure of 1.8 million planets with life. Let us further suppose that out of every 100 planets with life, there is one on which creatures with the same level of intelligence as Homo sapiens live. Then even this last supposition gives our Milky Way the vast number of 18,000 inhabited planets. Since the latest counts give 100 billion fixed stars in our Milky Way, probability indicates an incomparably higher figure than Dr. Ley puts forward in his cautious calculation. Without quoting fantastic figures or taking unknown galaxies into account, we may surmise that there are 18,000 planets comparatively close to the Earth with conditions essential to life similar to those of our own planet. Yet we can go even further and speculate that if only 1% of these 18,000 planets were actually inhabited, there would still be 180 left. there is no doubt about the existence of planets similar to the Earth, with a similar mixture of atmospheric gases, similar gravity, similar flora, and possibly even similar fauna. But is it even essential for the planets that support life to have conditions similar to the Earth's? The idea that life can flourish only under terrestrial conditions has been made obsolete by research. It is a mistake to believe that life cannot exist without water and oxygen. Even on our own Earth, there are forms of life that need no oxygen. They are called anaerobic bacteria. A given amount of oxygen acts like poison on them. Why should there not be higher forms of life that do not need oxygen? Under the pressure of the new knowledge that is being acquired every day, we shall have to bring our mental world picture up to date. Scientific investigation, concentrated on our Earth until very recently, has praised this world of ours as the ideal planet. It is not too hot and not too cold. It has plenty of water. There are unlimited quantities of oxygen. Organic processes constantly rejuvenate nature. In fact, the assumption that life can exist and develop only on a planet like the Earth is untenable. It is estimated that 2 million different species of living creatures live on the Earth. Of these, this again is an estimate, 1,200,000 are known scientifically. And among these forms of life known to science, there are still a few thousand that ought not to be able to live at all according to current ideas. The premises for life must be thought out and tested anew. For example, one would think that highly radioactive water would be free from germs. But there are actually some kinds of bacteria which can adapt themselves to the lethal water that surrounds nuclear reactors. An experiment carried out by biologist Dr. Sanford Siegel sounds eerie. He recreated the atmospheric conditions of Jupiter in his laboratory and bred bacteria and mites in this atmosphere, which share none of the prerequisites we have hitherto laid down for life. Ammonia, methane, and hydrogen did not kill them. The experiments by Dr. Howard Hinton and Dr. Bloom, Bristol University entomologists, had equally startling results. The two scientists dried a species of midge for several hours at a temperature of 100 degrees centigrade. Immediately afterward, they immersed their guinea pigs in liquid helium, which, as is well known, is as cold as space. After heavy irradiation, they returned the midges to their normal living conditions. The insects continued their biological vital functions and produced perfectly healthy midges. We also know of bacteria that live in volcanoes, of others that eat stone, and some that produce iron. The forest of question marks grows. Experiments are going on at many research centers. New proofs that life is by no means bound to the prerequisites for life on our planet are constantly accumulating. For centuries, the world appeared to revolve around the laws and conditions that govern life on Earth. This conviction distorted and blurred our way of looking at things. It put blinkers on scientific investigators, who unhesitatingly accepted our standards and systems of thought when viewing the universe. Teilhard de Chardin, the epoch-making thinker, suggested that only the fantastic has a chance of being real in the cosmos. If our way of thinking worked the other way around, it would mean that intelligences on another planet took their living conditions as a criterion. If they lived at temperatures of minus 150 to 200 degrees centigrade, they would think that those temperatures, which are destructive to life as we know it, were essential for life on other planets. That would match up to the logic with which we are trying to illuminate the darkness of our past. We owe it to our self-respect to be rational and objective. At some time or other, every daring theory seemed to be a utopia. How many utopias have long since become everyday realities? Of course, the examples given here are meant to point out the most far-fetched possibilities, yet once the improbable things that we cannot even conceive of today are shown to be true as they will be, barriers will fall, allowing free access to the impossibilities the cosmos still conceals. Future generations will find all kinds of life that have never been dreamed of in the universe. Even if we are not there to see it, they will have to accept the fact that they are not the only and certainly not the oldest, intelligences in the cosmos. The universe is estimated to be between 8 and 12 billion years old. Meteorites bring traces of organic matter under our microscopes. Bacteria millions of years old awake to new life. Floating spores traverse the universe, and at some time or other are captured by the gravitational field of a planet. New life has gone on developing in the perpetual cycle of creation for millions of years. Innumerable careful examinations of all kinds of stones in all parts of the world prove that the Earth's crust was formed about 4 billion years ago. Yes, and all that science knows is that something like man existed 1 million years ago. And out of that gigantic river of time, it has managed to dam up only a tiny rivulet of 7,000 years of human history, at the cost of a lot of hard work, many adventures, and a great deal of curiosity. But what are 7,000 years of human history compared with thousands of millions of years of the history of the universe? We, the paragons of creation, took 400,000 years to reach our present state and our present stature. Who can produce concrete proof to show why another planet should not have provided more favorable conditions for the development of other or similar intelligences? Is there any reason why we may not have competitors on another planet who are equal or superior to us? Are we entitled to discard this possibility? We have done so up to the present. How often the pillars of our wisdom have crumbled into dust. Hundreds and hundreds of generations thought that the Earth was flat. The iron law that the sun went around the Earth held good for thousands of years. We are still convinced that our Earth is the center of everything, although it has been proved that the Earth is an ordinary planet of insignificant size, 30,000 light-years from the center of the Milky Way. The time has come for us to admit our insignificance by making discoveries in the infinite unexplored cosmos. Only then shall we realize that we are nothing but ants in the vast state of the universe. And yet our future and our opportunities lie in the universe, where the gods promised they would. Not until we have taken a look into the future shall we be strong and bold enough to investigate our past honestly and impartially.